You've tuned in to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
You realize what you've done?
With Rich Liebig.
The real gangster plays his cards, right?
And Michael Costanzo.
What was that you just read?
Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news.
Good times, noodle salad.
The point is, you now have the ability to be happy.
And now, here's Rich and Mike on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Doing?
What's up, everybody?
It's time for this week's episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. Folks, it's our job to give you the most interesting tidbits in the world of sports, entertainment, odd news, and whatever else we happen to stumble across. Isn't that right, Mike?
That's right. We bring it to you with our unique sense of humor and wackiness. You never know what you're going to get here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. We have a couple of topics prepared for you, but sometimes, we will venture into uncharted territories and explore some comedy with the news here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. We got a couple things on the docket to discuss. But before we get into all of the news at hand, we'd like to do a little personal bit, let you know what's going on in our free time. So, Mike, how you doing? What's up in Costanzo country?
Pretty good. I recently started watching that show I talked about last week on Netflix, Living With Yourself.
Oh, yeah, the Paul Rudd.
Starring Paul Rudd.
Yeah,
It's really good. It's a quick, I haven't finished it yet, but it's a quick, dark comedy. You know, it's like 8 half-hour episodes. Finish it real quick. I'm really, you notice I say that a lot. I'm really into like the shorter seasons,
yeah.
The shorter series, because they're just a tighter package.
Right, right.
You know, but it's really good. Paul Rudd does a fantastic job playing two completely different roles. And it asks some really interesting questions, because the basic premise is, of course, he's down on his luck. He's not feeling so good about himself and his place in life. So he goes to this spa, which essentially promises to make him the best version of himself. That, unfortunately, is to literally clone him and make a better version of him and kill the previous version. But the killing part doesn't go to plan. That's not a spoiler. That's like literally the first 5 minutes of the first episode.
That was in the trailer.
Yeah, that was in the trailer. So then it's, you know, both of them. It's the regular, quote unquote, regular version and the quote unquote best version of him, both with the same memories, the same DNA, the same, for all intents and purposes, life experience. And how they're grappling with that now. You know, is the clone any less alive, or is his life any less of value? And is it right for the original Paul Rudd to come in and be like, hey, you know, I didn't sign up for this. You got to leave. You know, this is my life, my wife, my house, my everything. But the clone has all those same memories for. So in his mind, it's his life as well. So it's this really interesting little morally gray conundrum that they find themselves in. A lot of good dark humor. It's really, really good. It's a fun show. It's not going to get any award nominations or anything, but it's a great little distraction, and I've been having a blast with it. So I highly recommend it. Yeah,
Mike's reviews.
yeah. The other big thing that I was up to recently, and Rich, you can probably speak more to this because you were much more involved, is that I went to the Battle of the Bands that you were promoting
yes.
for the past couple of weeks, the Arc Alliance Battle of the Bands.
That's right.
The Water Tower.
Yeah.
Which I got to say.
Yeah, so that was your first time there, right?
My first time there, yeah. I've been to the Oaks Convention Center, but it's not the convention center. It's like near it, where Arnold's is. And I've actually never been to Arnold's. So it was quite an experience, and the best part of the experience was feeling like I was driving into a murder scene from a horror movie, because it's like completely dark back there.
Talking about the way to get
the
there,
way to
yeah.
get. It's like totally dark in the middle of nowhere. I'm like, is Rich leading me to like a random field where he's going to reveal, like, guess what? I'm a murderer and I'm going to kill you.
It's finally time.
But after I found the place in the pitch black in, you know, this random industrial wasteland, it was really nice. Like the actual location, like you said, it's a bowling alley, it's a bar, it's a go-kart, mini golf, laser tag, live music, restaurant. It's like everything you could possibly want all rolled into one location. It was really, really, really neat, really cool. And the event itself, the Arc Alliance Battle of the Bands, was fantastic. I don't want to steal too much of what you're planning to talk about.
No, go ahead.
I just want to say that the first act that they had up there, Phantom Trap, oh my God, they were so good.
Yes.
They were fantastic. I mean, they played my type of music. That's why I feel like I was a little bit biased towards them, because they were playing like the classic hard rock from like...
They had some good classic rock songs.
60s, 70s, 80s, and it was just a lot of fun. They really worked the stage and the crowd. The female vocalist, I don't know her name, but she was incredible. I mean, just this amazing, powerful voice, but she was, you know, coming down off the stage, getting in the crowd. It was so great. And it was just a blast, just the whole thing, just the setting, the music, the crowd. It was great from top to bottom, and it was all for an amazing cause.
Yeah. So Phantom Trap, yeah, they were the first band that were competing in the competition. The other two bands were also pretty good. The Outlaw Pandas, they played kind of a punk rock kind of set.
It was like a metal punk kind of thing.
At some points they went metal.
It was different,
including a metal song about ice cream, which I loved. I was like, I want to hear more of that.
That was truly bizarre.
Yeah,
because I'll admit that the group that I was with, we had sort of wandered off at one point to go and explore the rest of the area, and as we're coming back, we're hearing, you know, ice cream, we all scream for ice cream, and I'm like, what is happening? Like, do we stumble into like the wrong event or something? But no, it was the same event. They were just singing a metal version of like an ice cream song. And it was really interesting.
Right. I enjoyed that part.
Yeah.
So that was the Outlaw Pandas. And then the last band, New Pony Funk, it was in their title. They brought the funk. And it was great. My thing with that one was I really enjoyed, you could hear every member of that band had something that they brought to the table, between keyboards, bassist, lead guitarist, and drummer. They all had a unique role to play in their set list.
It's not a genre you hear a lot either. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's true. Funk is kind of forgotten about sometimes, but they brought the funk to our Battle of the Bands night. It was a great lineup from start to finish. And then also Fight Back Home, which was last year's winner. They played the open set as the quote-unquote house band. At the end, it was Phantom Trap that pulled it out. And it was well-deserved, I think. They really had like the best overall stage performance. And they were also very kind and donated their winnings towards the cause of the ARC Alliance.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a night for fun, rock, bowling, and charity. Waiting to hear the totals of what they raised, but I'm sure it was a lot.
I hope so. I mean, it's a great cause that they're working towards.
Yeah. They help people with mental incapacitations and mental problems succeed in life. It was my pleasure to be a part of this shindig as one of the official judges.
Yeah,
which was interesting.
You were a judge. You did a great job, by the way. I didn't expect them to hand off the mic to you guys, and you guys actually judged them like a reality TV show.
Yeah,
so that was pretty interesting. And
I tweeted that I was going to be Randy Jackson. What did you think?
You did. You were very Randy Jackson. You were very positive about all the groups.
Yeah,
which was good. That was awesome. You were rubbing elbows with some pretty big name people up there, though.
Yeah,
we were joking. We're like, man, Rich is up there with like you were up there with a Grammy winning producer.
Yes,
I think. And and who, the mayor of
Phoenixville.
And we were like, wow, Rich is like. He's like up there with these big names now. Rich is going to get too big for the crispy noodle now.
No,
all of a sudden,
no, of course not. No, this is my baby. But yeah, it was a little interesting because it was one of those things that, you know, I got invited to do it, and of course I said yes because I love doing things for charity. But yeah, when I heard I was going to sit next to an Emmy award winning producer and then the mayor of Phoenixville, I was like, well, okay, I guess I'm. I'm moving on up in the world of celebrity status here.
Yeah, you're
so
like
interesting
elite status now, Rich. What are you going to do with this new elite status?
You're also forgetting the best part about that, because they did a bio. Apparently, I didn't even know they were going to do that. We all got bios.
Well, you had a whole. Did you write that? Who came up with that bio? Yeah. It was like this whole big thing about the Crispy Noodle podcast.
Yeah. So they gave like a little brief bio of everybody, and Rich Liebig, he works for MMR, he does the Crispy Noodle podcast, and then over here we have a guy who's voted the top 20
one of the person top 20 people in America, and he's the mayor of Phoenixville. Like, it was just like, whoa.
You know what, though? That speaks volumes of the podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
That it was mentioned in the same introductory sequence as a Grammy Award-winning person and one of the top 20 people in America. So, that you know, it's the top 20 people, then the 21st person is actually, it's the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
There you go.
Boom. We're happy to make that announcement right here.
We're the 21st.
We're the 21st. That's right.
People in America.
Yeah, we always miss out on that list because it cuts off at 20.
Yeah.
We got to contact them and let them know they got to go to 21.
25.
25 at least, yeah.
Yeah, help us out.
So
we're 21 and Thoughts on Stuff podcast is at 25.
There you go. As it should be.
There you go.
You got to keep the healthy frenemy rivalry alive, right?
Got to give a shout out to them. But anyway, no, it was a whole lot of fun to do, the Battle of the Bands, for the Ark Alliance. I'm back again in the future cause I love doing that event and yeah, Arnold's is a great spot.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun the entire Friday night. I had a blast. So, props to the Ark Alliance, for putting that event on and, helping the people that need it in Montgomery County. And then one more thing I can get to for a quick review is I saw Zombieland 2, Double Tap.
Ooh, how was that? Yeah. I really want to see it. Is it good?
It's good.
How does it deal with the whole comedy sequel thing?
It does it pretty well. It does address the fact that it's been 10 years. And,
okay, awesome.
And you know, they don't try to hide it. And, you know, they have direct references to things that have happened.
Awesome.
There's also a couple of other zombie culture references that are made in this movie.
Walking
That's interesting.
Dead.
Yes.
Okay.
You're trying to be coy there. Yeah,
but, okay.
I'll leave it at that. If you like the first Zombieland, yeah, you're gonna love the second Zombieland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's exactly what I want
to
hear.
You have to see the first one. If you
That's a sequel.
Right. Yeah. Some people, you know, there are sometimes when you can get away with it. But this one, I'm going to say you have to see the first one in order to understand the second one.
Okay. So rewatch before we go and see it.
Actually, yeah, I would recommend that.
Because it has been a decade.
Right. You're right. So, yeah.
The first one came out when we were in high school. Right? Or no, just
09, that. Just after.
Just
college.
After. We went to see it way
back.
Yeah,
that's right.
When.
So it was, it was college. But yeah. So I would recommend, I recommend seeing the first one and then seeing Zombieland 2.
Okay.
All right, so there you go. That's all the stuff we were up to. Now it's time to get into the news at hand. It's time for the first batch of topics that revolve around sports. It's time for the sports sampler.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports, 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 sports.
In your face. Ha ha.
Oh, yeah. Sports coming at you in your face here. To get this out of the way here, the World Series is officially set. It's going to be the Washington Nationals versus the Houston Astros. Washington Nationals have been making an improbable run. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
A year after they lose Bryce Harper, somehow they got better.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
And here they are. They now are in their first World Series. And for Washington, D.C., it's the first time that there's going to be a World Series game in the city of Washington D.C. since
I looked it up beforehand. 1924.
There you
I forget the name. The Washington Senators, I
right,
think.
Right, right. Well, it's not even that team. Yeah, it's not.
I mean, it's like a century ago almost.
Just about, yeah.
Crazy.
So congrats on the Nationals for making it that far. And then the Houston Astros, they did the deed of knocking off the Yankees, much to everyone's cheer. Because I don't think anybody wants to see the Yankees win again.
No.
Other than Yankees fans.
Screw the Yankees.
By the way, fun fact, the 2010s is going to be the first decade in, I think, since like the 50s that the Yankees have not made a World Series run.
I hate the Yankees so much.
So there you go.
That fact right there just pisses me off beyond belief.
Right.
You're telling me that a fan base, every decade, they're like, oh, we're going to win at least once this decade.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Well, thank God for the 2010s.
Yep, so there you go.
2019 did one thing right.
Yeah. So there you go. Take that, Yankees fans. but the Houston Astros, they did the deed. They knocked the Yankees out, so they are representing the American League. And they're trying to build their own dynasty. They won in 2017. They were out of action last year, but here they are back in the saddle again trying to win Their second title in three seasons.
I'll say this. It needs to be decided in six games because that's when we record next.
Yeah. If it goes to a game seven, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do.
It's going to be awkward.
Yeah. Maybe we have like a little party or something. To be honest with you, I said it last week on the podcast, though. I really enjoy
Game Sevens.
A World Series Game Seven.
It's fun stuff.
There's nothing like it.
Well, Game Seven in any sports. I mean, football is the only sport where you don't get series like that. But Game Seven, there's just this pressure and this excitement about it.
But Game Seven in baseball really changes the fundamentals of baseball. You know,
well, you're talking about like pitching rotation and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, strategy wise. Yeah.
Right. Even in the postseason, if you're expected to make it deep in the playoffs, you're still kind of working on a 3-4 man rotation.
Right.
So you want to give players rest and everything like that. But when it's a Game 7 World Series, everything goes out the window.
You go back to your ace and you're like, can you do it again?
Right. Doesn't matter if you just played last night.
Right.
You know, it literally is. Can you help us right now? We need you.
It's the stuff legends are made of.
Right, it is. So, logistically for recording the podcast, yeah, it's going to be a nightmare if there's a Game 7.
Yeah.
But personally, I would like to see a Game 7. It's just, it's a different brand of baseball. And it's perfect.
I'm not supposed to say it, but I want the Nats to win. I do.
Why?
Because it's a good story, and I don't really...
It's going to make us look stupid.
Dude, we deserve it.
All right, Mike is in like,
you can't ask me about Philly sports right now because I'm in a certain way.
Mike is in Philly martyrdom or something. He is like just everything Philadelphia. Oh, we suck. This is it. Everything. Mike.
Really?
Yeah.
You disagree?
All right. Well. All right, we'll get to it, Mike.
No, I don't want to. Let's talk about literally
baseball.
Anything else.
You want to talk about baseball? Now that we're done shitting on the Phillies, let's move on to shitting on the Eagles. Because, yep. We've basically now hit DEFCON 1.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Yeah, we're there now.
I feel my heart rate increasing as we're getting closer to this. So, the big headline, of course, why we're at DEFCON 1 now, as is every time we lose to the Dallas Cowboys. The Eagles suffered a blowout loss to our heated rivals, the Dallas Cowboys, 37-10.
I hate the fucking Eagles, man.
Yeah. The Big Lebowski, yeah, I couldn't said it any better myself.
I hate the fucking Eagles, man.
You know, I kind of agree with him right now.
I hate the fucking Eagles, man.
Oh, man. As far as I'm concerned, fire up the grill because we're having chicken for dinner right now. Let's grill these sons of bitches. What the hell is going on with this team, Rich? Oh, my God. Go ahead. You start.
Wow. Mike is already just collapsing. So the Dallas Cowboys, they brought all their star players, their star power, and they just went to town on the Eagles. Obviously, our pass defense was already in a piss poor state of affairs.
You know what's crazy
but with
is
the
that
Cowboys bringing
that's not
Cooper,
even that's not even what killed us.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But with them having Cooper and Cobb and their assortment of receiving threats, they were able to take advantage.
Actually, that's the one bright spot of this game. Jalen Mills did, I think, a fine job.
That's one player.
Amari. Well, look, for not having played for an entire year and change, he came in and he almost led the team in tackles, had a pass deflection and an interception. Granted, it was in garbage time, but with the exception of one long 44-yard pass, he was holding Amari Cooper in check. And that one pass, he was in perfect position, and Cooper just is Amari Cooper. You know, yeah. Jalen Mills couldn't have played it any better, but I made a specific point to pay attention to Mills and see Dak Prescott would look there and go right away to his second option a lot of times because Jalen Mills was taking away Cooper. But
yeah, but for the rest of the team.
But what the hell happened with the rest of the team? Well, the offensive woes continue to plague this team. I don't know what needs to happen. I don't know. The fire grow, release all the wide receivers, have a fire sale. I don't know. But I'm looking at the Pro Football Focus stats here, and these are where our wide receivers rank. They ranked 184 wide receivers, Pro Football Focus. Alshon Jeffrey is the 35th best wide receiver. You might be saying, but there's 32 teams. So you mean every other of the 31 teams potentially have a better wide receiver, and then three other random fucks are better than Alshon Jeffery before you get to our number one receiver? And then you go down the list, Nelson Agholor, 160th out of 184. Mack Hollins, 166th out of 184. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, 182nd out of 184. He has 25 snaps, zero receptions, zero yards, zero touchdowns. He's a second-round pick. This offense is doing nothing. They are not helping Carson Wentz at all. Anybody that wants to blame Carson Wentz is totally off base.
Yeah.
Could he be playing better? Sure. And everybody at any point, unless you're Tom Brady, could be playing better. But this offense is, I don't even know. It's crippled. It's defeated. It's done before they even get going.
Yeah, and you.
But
you,
hey, we scored first quarter points.
But you, this one you can tell with Agholor. Just, I mean, he literally gave up on a throw that he should have had.
He did. Oh, it was terrible.
Yeah.
He short armed the shit out of that. And it goes to show you, and this has been a common complaint of his, he's not good at tracking deep balls. And Pro Football Focus backs it up with stats. He's caught the lowest percentage of catchable deep balls of any wide receiver. He only catches 20% of catchable deep passes. And that one right there sealed the deal for me with Nelson Agholor. Because his excuse was, by the time he started tracking it, it was already out of position. The ball is out of position? Carson Wentz can modify the trajectory of the ball mid-flight? I wasn't aware of this superpower. So either you didn't start tracking it soon enough, or you're just terrible at your job, former first-round wide receiver.
Yeah, so...
Go ahead, Rich. You say something.
The wide receiving core is definitely on the hot seat. And personally, if the rumor is true that Alshon Jeffery is the one behind locker room leaks, that's it. That's game over. That indicates that even the star players are bailing on this season.
I hate to feed into the circle jerk, knee reaction, hot take thing, but has Doug Peterson lost the locker room? Is this a quote-unquote dysfunctional team at this point? Because you look now, this is 2 years in a row that quote-unquote anonymous, or as people are saying online, Alshonymous source is dissing Carson Wentz. Last year, he was checking down too much to Zach Ertz. Now he's not checking down enough. So you have that going around. Lane Johnson calling out people post-game for coming to meetings and practices late. And then Malcolm Jenkins calls out Lane Johnson for calling out people. Then McNabb calls out everybody for calling out people, saying if you're going to call out people, do it, you know, behind the scenes. Don't air it to the media. Is this a team in disarray?
As of right now, yes. Absolutely.
So what needs to happen? What are the Eagles going to do to fix this? Because this has been my complaint and why I was jamming the panic button a week ago. Because I see a team that's not grabbing the bull by the horns, is not taking charge, is not taking action. And it's indicated in the way that we completely sleep on players out there on the trade block. It's evidenced in the fact that they've made no game changes mid-game. Right? They're unable to adjust at all. They're adjusting a week behind. They were criticized for not running enough. So they come into Dallas and they're like, we're going to be committed to the run, even though we're down by 27 points. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So they're adjusting a week behind. They're losing the locker room. They're sleeping on possible trade targets and free agency targets. I mean, just earlier this week, the Patriots traded for Mohamed Sanu.
Yep.
San Fran traded for Emmanuel Sanders. Last week, we talked about Marcus Peters and Jalen Ramsey moving teams. Before the season, Jadeveon Clowney went for basically peanuts. Minkah Fitzpatrick went for a little bit more than peanuts. And the Eagles are like, no, we're good. We're fine.
Yeah.
We totally don't need any of these top-tier talent. So now we signed two practice squad defensive tackles. Woo! One of which is going to be starting, Rich. What the fuck is going on with the Eagles?
Yeah, they have to take a practice squad player and they're going to have to force him to start. I mean, it's just...
So this is why I've been hitting the panic button, because this is a team that I think is intentionally starting to rebuild through inaction.
Oh, you think that they're giving up this season?
Why have they made no effort to get any of these marquee players? They made a little bit of effort for Ramsey, but I mean, and tomorrow is probably going to be the big news. Eagles sign every big name player ever. But I mean, is the inaction bothering you at all? Because it's bothering me.
Well,
I feel like they're just sitting there and they're like, we're content. But what I'm seeing between the lines is we have too much money on the books. Our team is too old. So we're not going to take action that's not going to completely fix the team. And we're just going to wait for this hand to play itself out.
Yeah, that might be the case that Howie's doing.
You got to get Jason Peters and Brandon Graham off the books before you make moves.
It's just a shame to see that to see all these moves being made and the Eagles haven't been a part of any of them. Especially the Patriots getting Mohamed Sanu is one of the most just ridiculous things ever to wake
it
up
is.
From on a Monday morning.
It's like they don't even need him.
They
were winning games without him.
They beat the Jets like 27-0 on Monday night. I wake up Tuesday and they're more active than the Eagles are in two blowout losses.
You criticize me all the time for supposedly being a secret Patriots fan. They've been to 9 Super Bowls and won 6. And that is how they get there. By never resting on their laurels and saying, we are happy with our team. Yeah, you might say it to the media, but you're always trying to get better. For the past 2 years, the Eagles have said, no, we're good. That's what pisses me off the most. We're good.
Well, the Super Bowl run, we traded for Jay Ajayi, so we did that once.
And we've literally done nothing
right.
since.
We've never made a splash like that.
You realize they started Craig James as the dime cornerback over a healthy Sidney Jones. And then they signed 2 practice squad defensive tackles after releasing Zach Brown. And I can't even remember the other poor saps we cut. Zach Brown, Orlando Scandrick, and who was the other one? And Akeem Spence. So we cut 3 defensive players and signed 2 practice squad players. How does that math add up to you?
Yeah, it doesn't. So where do we go from here? Because... I forgot about this. There's something that you wanted to play from Eagles legend.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you.
I totally forgot about this before we look toward the future.
I told you to remind me because I would get so mad that I would forget. So thank you, Rich.
Yes.
There's one level-headed person here. We're not the only ones upset about this. Brian Westbrook is also upset about the current Eagles team. And I'm going to let him do the talking for himself. So this is Brian Westbrook on the 27-point loss to the Cowboys.
They looked soft in all their games except for the Packers game. And I think they got beat up in the trenches, offensive and defensive line, in all games except for the Packers.
You know what?
And I hope that they can hear this and that they say, you know what? Screw him. We're going to prove him wrong. I really, really do. But they look soft. They look like a team that's not hungry. They look like a team that has no fire underneath their in their belly. And they're the second oldest team in the league. So you got a bunch of veterans on your football team, and you should never go into a Sunday night game and get blown out by 27, period. And lastly, Doug Peterson, I just want to mention this. You're down by 27. You got 2-3 minutes left in the game, and you're starting to run draws. You know what you should try to do? How about you try to get your offense on track against the third-string scrubs that the Dallas Cowboys are putting out there? How about you try to get your offense on track next week and stop running draws? How about you don't give up on your team? How about you do that? Because I'll tell you what Bill Belichick would have done, he would have been bombing bombs away. He wouldn't have been like, oh, we give up. We're just going to go into the locker room and lick our wounds. He ain't saying that. He's saying, you know what? We're going to continue to fight. We're calling a timeout, even though we don't have a chance of getting the ball back. We're going to continue to fight until the clock says zero.
Mm.
How about that?
How about that? Yep. That's Brian Westbrook.
Brian Westbrook with, choice words there.
What do you think, Rich?
He's absolutely right.
Has the coaching and front office given up on this season? It feels like they have at times.
Which is, I hope that's not the case, because the way the division is, the Eagles could actually still make a run for it.
So I alluded to this at dinner. I'm glad we're going to get into this now. That's the worst possible thing that could happen, because that is how teams like the Dallas Cowboys get stuck with Jason Garrett. We make the playoffs this year. Mike Groh will be back next year. Jim Schwartz will be back next year. And nothing will change if we make the playoffs. I am almost at the point where I hope we lose the majority of the rest of our games so that changes are forced upon this team. Because right now, that's what did us in. We made the playoffs last year, and it was like, we fooled ourselves. Remember, I talked about it. We fooled ourselves. Avante Maddox can be a great starting corner. No, he can't. No, he can't. Shut up. I see the talk online. He's injured right now. You people online are like, Avante Maddox is our best corner. You don't know that. He played like 4 games.
Yeah.
This is common Philly tactics. We trick ourselves. Bryce Harper, he's going to help us win 100-plus games. We're going to make the playoffs, and we're going to do everything. That didn't happen. Oh, Avante Maddox is the best cornerback. Don't worry. We're going to be back in the playoffs. It's not going to happen. Yeah, we can, but should we?
Yeah. If you want change to happen, yeah, you want this season to provide a drastic exclamation point
so,
that there's something wrong with this team. But
I'll ask you this. Are you happy with the team in its current form? With the coaching,
after
the
last 2 games, no. Uh-uh.
So that being said, do you want the team to make the playoffs this year? Do you hope they make the playoffs?
Well, yes, because I just don't want to see Dallas win the division. I don't want to hear the stupid Cowboys fans running their mouth all the time.
I hate to break it to you,
yada yada yada.
But 538 updated their predictions. The Eagles are now predicted to go 8-8. They have a 38% chance to make the playoffs. 34% to win the division.
That's kind of sad that they still have that large of a chance to win the division at an 8-8 projected record.
I guess we're the NFC least right now.
Right. Best case scenario for me is Dallas makes the playoffs and they get blown out in the first game. That would be hilarious.
I could see that happening.
Yeah.
When you look at the talent across the NFC, the Seahawks and San Fran in the West, and in the North you got the Vikings and the Packers.
Yeah, I'm
and
hoping.
In the South you got the Panthers and the Saints. It's brutal.
Hopefully one of them puts the smack down on the Cowboys.
Whichever NFC East team has the unlucky opportunity to play in the playoffs this year, they're going to get absolutely embarrassed by one of these actual good teams. The Saints look like a Super Bowl team without Drew Brees.
Yep.
The Packers.
The Patriots look like they're going to go 16-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a tale of haves and have-nots right now in the NFL. And right now the Eagles are on the side of have-nots.
Makes me sick.
All right. Well, let's see if we can make you feel better with other teams to talk about, because we got to get to our fantastic four picks for week number 8 of the NFL season. So let's load up the queue and go over the games. What are we going to predict?
All right. In the average teams who are somehow better than the Eagles Bowl, the Oakland Raiders facing off against the Houston Texans Sunday at 4:30. Rich, who's going to win this one? The Raiders, of course, closing out their time in Oakland. The Texans trying to stay alive behind a surging Colts team. Who's going to win this matchup?
I think Houston wins this one. I would rather trust Deshaun Watson than Derek Carr. That's what I think this boils down to. It should be a offensive scoring game, I think. The Raiders were trying to contend with the Packers last week, but man, Aaron Rodgers turned into a superhero to beat them in that game. So, I'm going to go with Houston at home. Deshaun Watson should be comfy, should be relying on DeAndre Hopkins, and Kenny Stills is going to have a big step up in this game, which, by the way, for fantasy purposes, if he's free in your league, you might want to consider picking him up.
Always thinking about the fantasy angle.
Yeah, just checking.
Well, how about this? Two of the top 10 rushing attacks in the league facing off against each other. This is going to be one of those ground and pound games. It's going to be, it's just going to be one in the trenches. And I think the Texans have the slight edge over the Raiders. They're going to be comfortable at home. Like you said, they have a slightly better defense, slightly better passing offense. So on paper, if all comes to fruition, this should be an easy one. Not an easy one, but a doable one for the Texans. Next up, we have a possible NFC playoff preview. The Carolina Panthers traveling to San Francisco to face off against the undefeated 49ers. Rich, can the 49ers keep this undefeated streak going? I don't think anybody was really expecting this. 6-0 heading into week 8.
No, the 49ers, they've realized they got something special on their defensive front. That defense has been probably the best in the NFC. They are shutting opposing teams down. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they have one of the best run games in the league. Tevin Coleman, Matt Breda, that offensive rushing attack is doing their job and making Jimmy Garoppolo's job a heck of a lot easier. So I think if they stick to the traditional strong defense, strong run game, Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't have to do too much. Sounds to me like it's another win for San Francisco. Although I do have to admit, Carolina Panthers are looking pretty good too without Cam Newton. And if I'm Carolina, I might be thinking about trading Cam Newton.
I mean, while the value is still relatively high,
Because Kyle Allen, he's, not to say he's a game manager, but Cam Newton feels like because he's Superman, he has to do everything in that offense.
Right.
For the first time, the Panthers offense has been a nice split between Christian McCaffrey and the passing game. It feels like for the first time ever, they've worked out what's the proper ratio that has worked with that offense, and that's why the Panthers have been winning games lately.
Yeah, and when you have a top 10 rushing attack, you don't necessarily need your quarterback to be Superman.
I still think, though, the 49ers win at home.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Panthers are not a team that generally likes to travel, I don't think. And the 49ers, as you mentioned about the defense, they are actually the second best defense in the league statistically.
Yep.
And their offense is right behind that, just on paper, the seventh best. So, you know, this 49ers team, they've got everything going for them, and they just traded for Emmanuel Sanders. It's going to hopefully open things up over the top, get that passing game going more.
He literally just got traded, so I don't know how much he's going to be worked into this first game.
True.
Probably the week after is when he'll be
true,
really
but if you're in. The Panthers, you still have to consider it as an angle. Yeah. You know, you have to figure they're going to want to play with their brand new toy. They're going to they're going to draw up a few deep passes to target Sanders.
New toy.
Exactly.
Shiny.
Yeah. You're telling me they're not going to draw up a couple deep bombs for Garoppolo to Sanders? Of course they are. So I think it's going to be a bit much for the Panthers to handle on the road. I like the 49ers in this one as well. Next up, we have a primetime showdown, the Green Bay Packers at the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a Sunday 8:30 game. Rich, who do you got for this one? This is going to be a good one. Although maybe not. The Chiefs, they're without Mahomes.
That's right. And I think that's a deciding factor in this. I'm going to go with Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers has really stepped up the last couple of games. Matt LaFleur looks like he knows how to call this offense properly. And they also got a decent running game going now with Aaron Jones and Williams.
Also, that defense is sneakily good.
That too.
Like on paper, they're giving up a lot of yards, but they're, in terms of points allowed, top 10.
That's right. And unfortunately, Kansas City without Patrick Mahomes, I don't know. I think Kansas City loses this game and the Vikings next week. I mean, do you really trust Matt Moore? That's their backup, Matt Moore.
I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, that's their backup, Matt Moore. Do you trust him?
No.
Yeah, I'm going with Packers.
Yeah, you know, this one's an easy one for me. Aaron Rodgers is finally hitting his groove. Like I said, the defense is sneakily good. And the Chiefs, without Mahomes, we just don't know what that's going to do. They had the number one passing attack, but now it's a giant question mark.
Yep.
You know, is it going to be the same? So for that very reason, and it's always tough bringing a backup quarterback their first game, you know, they don't have any practice or any experience running that offense, you know, the first team offense. So it's going to be a little bit of learning curve in prime time. I feel like the Packers have got this one. And finally, unfortunately, the Eagles are also playing this week. They're traveling to Buffalo to face off against the shockingly good Buffalo Bills. Rich, do we stand a chance at winning this one?
There's still a chance because the Buffalo Bills, while they have a strong defense, Josh Allen still hasn't really popped into form as a trustworthy quarterback. He's been doing pretty good with his legs, actually. He's been proving his skills as a mobile quarterback. But, you know, that passing attack doesn't scare me. Name one wide receiver on the Bills.
I don't know.
Exactly.
They're probably just as good as ours.
I'll tell you what.
Hopefully in a few weeks, Nelson Aguilar will be one of them.
I'm going to go, for the record, I will say the Bills because they have the strongest defense between the two and they're going to be at home. But the Eagles do have a shot in this game. If they can get to Josh Allen and get him stressed out, they can take over that game. It is actually, I know it's hard to believe, this is actually a winnable game, but I think Buffalo does prevail in this one.
I mean, is it winnable? Yes. So were a lot of Eagles games, like the Lions and the Falcons and the Cowboys and the Vikings. I don't think they stand a chance in hell winning this one. That defense, look at what the Cowboys did to us with their defense. The Bills have an even better defense, and they have a really strong rushing attack, just like the Cowboys. If the Eagles overcommit to defending the run, which they will, because that's really the only thing they have going for them, it's going to leave them open up over the top. And as we saw Kirk Cousins eviscerate us, you know, when he was having bad game after bad game, Dak Prescott looked really good against us. He's not really an elite level quarterback. You know, the Eagles have this knack of making average teams look a lot better than they actually are, i.e. the Atlanta Falcons and the Detroit Lions and the Dallas Cowboys, who just lost to the Jets before making us look stupid. So, prove me wrong, Eagles. We're in that type of season. We're back in like 2015 mode. Prove me wrong. I got Bills for this one.
Okay. And there you go. That's our Fantastic Four picks for week number 8 of the NFL season.
I'm not bitter. No. I'm okay.
Mike is in full-blown panic mode.
I still don't get how you aren't. This is 2 weeks in a row where I'm just like, I'm like looking at like a mirage or something. You're like, you know that meme where the dog is sitting in the house on fire?
Yeah, that's me.
That's you and Doug Peterson right now. You're sitting down, you're having a cup of coffee. This is fine. I don't get it.
Because I knew this would be
teach
the
me your wisdom.
Because I knew this would be the toughest stretch the Eagles were going to face.
But 3-4?
Yeah, I thought they were going to go 3-4, 3-5 going into the bye week. But, you know, I'm more worried about just how bad they've just been blown
out. But, like, the off-the-field issues, too, now are becoming... Like, this is... When you look at, quote-unquote, dysfunctional teams, like the Dolphins and the Bengals and the Browns, then the Redskins, the one thing they all have in common is the thing happening with the Eagles right now. Players calling out each other, coaches not taking accountability, whiffing on, you know, big name players that they need to make themselves better, and it's all just coalescing all at once. You couple that with the injuries, and just like you watch them play, like Westbrook said, no fire.
Yep.
No, Jalen Mills coming off an injury was the most active player in that game.
Yep. And they're going to need to have that. Yeah, they're going to need to take that to heart and reassess where they want to be this season. All right, but we got to stop this. Mike has to stop or he's going to have a...
Stop the bleeding. Stop the bleeding.
We got to stop or he's going to have a heart attack. So we're going to end the sports sampler there. But coming up next, we got the entertainment entree. We got some interesting things to talk about with Star Wars and Marvel movies. And then the non-fortune cookie odd news. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Crispy noodle, always crunchy.
This is Guardian Shield, and you are listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Mike, it's going to be okay. I know things are looking grim right now in the world of Philly sports.
If you say so, Rich.
Somehow we'll get through this.
Okay. I feel like this is a support group.
Yeah. This is what it really is for Philly fans.
It is.
Because, yeah, we've had some rough times recently with the Eagles and the Phillies, but... Yeah, the Sixers are coming up, man.
Yeah, it's true. Trust the process. Complete the process. Let's go.
Right. It's time to complete the process. So maybe the Sixers will give us a better hope for Philly sports futures. But for right now, we got to move past sports, and we got to go to our next segment that revolves around movies, TV, video games, stuff like that in the entertainment entree.
And now, the latest in movies.
The Simpson guy writes to movies. Dear Die Hard, you rock. Especially when that guy was on the roof.
Music.
I know what that is. That's music.
Video games.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite store on the Citadel.
Celebrities.
You really know Warren Beatty?
Yes, I do. I took a leak next to him once at the Golden Globes.
And more.
You were the all singing, all dancing crap of the world.
This is the entertainment entree.
Hello,
not alone. Good people will fight if we lead them.
People keep telling me they know me. No one does.
What are you doing there, 3PO?
Taking one last look, sir. At my friends.
So chills. There you go. That's part of the trailer that debuted on Monday night, during Monday Night Football, actually. It's official now. We are less than 2 months away from episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker.
I am so excited.
This is officially we're in the home stretch now.
Yeah, well, that's it. That was the final trailer.
Yeah, that's
so it. I mean, Disney's probably, you know, they're going to do a whole big media run up, but you know, that's probably the last new footage we'll get until the movie actually comes out. But a lot of great moments in that trailer.
Yeah.
I love the voiceovers from like the whole cast.
Yeah,
because it was like a little bit of everybody.
Right, right. We didn't play it, but yeah, there's some for Luke, some for Leia. Yeah.
Right. The Force will be with you always, right?
Right, right, at the end, yeah. How
do you feel, buddy? Because this has been, like, you've always been the biggest Star Wars fan that I've known.
Yes.
I consider myself a pretty big fan, but like you are another level.
It's definitely a little bittersweet because I'm starting to realize that this is really going to be it for the Skywalker saga.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Definitely hits me in the feels with all the, you know, the voiceovers from Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher I'm interested to see how they're going to bring Palpatine back.
Yeah,
the Emperor's coming back.
He actually made an appearance in the trailer.
Yeah.
If people look carefully. Like, what was that thing that he was in? Like a big mech suit throne
thing,
machine?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
And how exactly are they going to justify him coming back?
Yeah.
Is it like a clone?
But he's actually back. Like,
right.
That was the thing. Like, it's not like some Force Ghost thing. It's
the villain.
Metaphorical, abstract thing. He is like...
Yeah, the villain.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it could be a red herring. I don't know, but...
Yeah,
yeah, I just the space battles look bigger. It looks more grand. It's got a lot of emotion packed into it, and you see Kylo Ren and Rey having a lot of scenes together too.
I love that scene where Kylo is just walks with that tidal wave that's hitting behind him.
Yeah,
and he's just like no funny business, all serious, just walking forward.
It's going to be the most badass Star Wars movie ever, I think.
Ever. Wow,
yeah.
I don't know about ever.
Did you see some of the scenes where they're riding the space horses on top of a Star Destroyer in like that battle?
Yes.
Like, it's going to get crazy.
Well, we'll see how exactly things shake out. I'm excited but also bittersweet because this is the last one, and you know, things like C-3PO, obviously something's going to happen with his mind.
One last look at my friends, that was sad.
He's either going to get, his mind's going to get erased, or he's going to get blown up or something, because...
They just want to blow him up for no other reason.
Yeah, nine episodes, we haven't blown him up yet.
Why do you want to do this to me? Because we feel like it.
Yeah, take that. But it's definitely bittersweet as a Star Wars fan to know that this is... The Skywalker saga officially coming to an end, it'll be worth it. I think I think it's going to be a good movie.
I think so too.
I hope it doesn't disappoint, because I know you disagree with me on this. If Episode 9 doesn't do, you know, isn't that good? I don't know. I think it fails the entire sequel trilogy. But we'll see.
That's really high stakes, but
it is.
I disagree there. I think you like Last Jedi.
I do like Last Jedi.
So I think
Jedi.
If you like Last Jedi, you will probably like this one coming out because everybody, literally everyone besides us, hated The Last Jedi. So don't worry. I think you're pretty safe in assuming that you're going to like the end to the sequel trilogy.
Okay. Well, hopefully...
we're all
on different spectrums.
Yeah.
I'm calm about the Eagles. You're panicking about the Eagles. I'm kind of internally kind of panicking about this movie that I'm not sure how this is going to go.
And I'm like, it's all good,
and you're
man.
Like, yeah, it's all good.
You know why? Because like I've legitimately enjoyed the sequel trilogy so far. And I know I get a lot of flack for that from other Star Wars fans I've talked to, but I've really enjoyed the movies. I think they did a phenomenal job of bridging the gap between generations and tying the past to the present and the future. And it's and as movies, they're just fun. They're just fun movies. So, but
yeah,
I understand for you, it's a completely different level. I understand that.
Yeah, this is life.
This is life. Yeah.
So maybe that's the difference for
you.
For
will
Mike.
Literally die if it doesn't do well.
I might have a heart attack if this ends in like the goofiest way possible or something. If there's a time travel plot or something. Yeah.
Luke's eyes snap open. Oh, that was the craziest dream ever.
Yeah.
Yoda, what did you do to me? I used a mind spell. I don't know.
Your inner subconscious came out. Yes.
Yeah. Rich just throws his popcorn on
come on.
Onto the floor. He's like, I'm done. Burns down the entire theater.
Well, we'll see how the Rise of Skywalker. I was about to say Last Jedi. No, Last Jedi. The Rise of Skywalker. We'll see how The Rise of Skywalker does in December. Like, 2 months away and counting. All right, now it's time to get to the portion of the show where Mike lets you know what's coming up this weekend with movies, TV, and video games in Mike's This Week in Entertainment.
Oh.
All right, what will make you go, oh?
Well, maybe this one, if you're looking for a good horror thriller movie to see
oh.
in theaters. Yeah, if you're looking for a good horror thriller movie to see in theaters before Halloween, Countdown might be the movie for you. When a young woman downloads an app that claims to predict exactly when a person will die, and it tells her she only has 3 days left to live, she must race to find a way to save her life before the timer runs out. There are currently no reviews, but given the rating and the genre, don't expect this to garner any awards attention. Still, it could prove to be a fun and tense thriller for the Halloween season. If you're looking for something just to go see for a bit of fun, not too serious, go check it out. That's Countdown, coming to theaters this week. In television, it's time to add one more post-apocalyptic story to your watch list with Daybreak. This Netflix original is a genre-blending absurdist horror comedy set in California that's part Ferris Bueller-esque coming-of-age story, part Mad Max, and part zombie apocalypse. In the aftermath of a nuclear blast, a group of teens must survive against marauding gangs styled after various high school cliques and clubs, zombie-like creatures, and more. It is generally favorable reviews so far on Rotten Tomatoes, so it might be worth a shot this week on Netflix. Gotta tell you, watched the trailer, and the main character does the whole breaking the fourth wall, Ferris Bueller narration style stuff. It looks pretty interesting. It's like high school Mad Max in a zombie apocalypse. So that okay. sounds compelling to you. Give it a shot. That's Daybreak, coming to Netflix. And finally, in video games, for people who were disappointed with Mass Effect and the latest Mass Effect and Fallout games, you'll want to look into this one. The Outer Worlds is releasing this Friday on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. This open-world RPG is set in an alternate future where U.S. President McKinley was never assassinated and allowed big business trusts to develop into megacorporations that went on to dominate society. Players assume the role of a space colonist who wakes up from cryosleep at the edge of colonized space to find most of his fellow passengers still in hibernation, which prompts them to begin investigating what went wrong and the true nature of the corporations in the colonies. The game allows for a wealth of customization options and flexibility in gameplay and story, with different companions, playstyles, and a branching story impacted by missions and dialogue options. The game has an 86 out of 100 on Metacritic, with reviewers praising the zany sci-fi tone, the level of player freedom, the huge variety, and the focused open world design. I gotta tell you, it looks really, really cool. You can model your character any way you want, include giving them flaws, which give you negative things that impact the character, but also in exchange for like more skill points and stuff. So you can really tailor fit your character exactly the way you like them. It's really interesting, really cool. And from
it sounds like a weird Mass Effect.
It is very much like a Mass Effect. You bring two companions with you on every mission, and in between missions, you go back to your ship called the Unreliable, and you can wander around the ship and talk to companions. And it's semi-open world, so open world hubs. And they say it's about 15 to 30 hours and emphasizes replayability because of the number of choices and narrative branching paths, which I'm all for because I'm tired of the 100-hour plus RPGs. Those are getting really exhausting. I like the more focused games nowadays.
All right. You might have sold me on this one.
Yeah, go check it out. That's The Outer Worlds coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC this week. That's what we're looking forward to this week in entertainment.
Real quick, I didn't put this on the rundown, but since you mentioned an alternate history, I watched the premiere of Watchmen.
Oh yeah, you did. How was that?
And I gotta say, man, that HBO has pulled no punches, which really? I'm happy to see.
Pulled no punches in what terms of like the subject matter? Like it's like gritty and violent,
gritty and not of the main core, the main. A schism that happens in this universe is racism.
Okay.
But they trace it back to like the Tulsa race riots that happened back in the early 1900s.
Okay.
And they don't pull any punches. They don't make it look at all, you know, they didn't sugarcoat it at all.
Okay.
As the, you know,
I mean, good. Nor should they.
Right. And it bleeds well into the alternate current timeline that they've established for this series.
Okay.
So far we're only one episode in. We're only in with the debut episode. But if you like if you liked Watchmen the movie, I think you're gonna like the TV spinoff.
Do you need to watch the movie to watch the spinoff? Do you think it helps?
It helps. Yeah,
because I've heard it's a remix. I don't know what that means.
It's basically 20. Let me start over. The movie Watchmen takes place in the late 80s, but in an alternate universe where Richard Nixon has had he's had his fourth term as president. We easily handled Vietnam.
Okay.
But there's still a threat of the Soviet Union.
Okay.
So
is this the same universe just now?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, this is 2019, but from that alternate timeline. So beepers are still a thing for some odd reason.
Okay. We have superheroes, but somehow we
never got cell
phones. Beepers.
Yeah. Beepers are still a thing.
Okay.
You like it
because the world stopped in 1980. that's what you like.
Maybe.
That's the real secret here.
Maybe. Robert Redford is now president.
So the actual Robert Redford.
Yeah, that's like a running joke. You keep seeing like the best presidents, and Robert Redford one of them.
Okay.
So there's stuff like that. But all in all, they do tackle a lot of serious social commentary and social justice matters.
Okay.
And yeah, so I definitely would recommend watching it. Again, another one of these alternate history. Yeah.
That sounds right up my alley. Alternate history is all the rage nowadays.
Yeah.
Man in the High Castle, yeah. Watchmen, Outer Worlds. It's
Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein, yeah. And alternate history has always been a popular genre.
Yeah.
You know what else is a very popular genre, though?
Yeah, I know.
Superhero movies, specifically Marvel movies. You liked that transition, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Well, you know who's not a fan of certain movie transition trends is our good friend Martin Scorsese and now Francis Ford Coppola. The controversy continues over whether or not Marvel movies are quote-unquote cinema, and famous directors are choosing sides.
Yeah, this is literally like which team are you on?
Well, we said a few weeks ago, this is like a civil war developing in the film industry. And it's not just Marvel, it's sort of like
all superhero movies.
It's all superhero movies, but it's also just the general direction of the film industry as well. You see, you know, the arguments over Netflix, and now the arguments over Marvel superhero movies. It's like the old guard versus the new. But let's talk about the big directors that are taking sides this week. I feel like it's a weekly entry in this. So Francis Ford Coppola comes on the scene. He's got some pretty harsh words for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Let me pull up the quote here. He says, quote, when Martin Scorsese says that the Marvel pictures are not cinema, he's right. Because we expect to learn something from cinema, we expect to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration. I don't know that anyone gets anything out of seeing the same movie over and over again. Then he goes on to add, quote, Martin was kind when he said it's not cinema. He didn't say it's despicable, which I just say it is.
There you go. Spit in the fire.
Despicable. Well, Kevin Smith joins the battle now as well on the side of the Marvel Universe. And he has some choice words as well. Let me pull up his quote. There's a huge, long list here of all the quotes of all the different directors on the LA Times.
It literally is like a...
It is a civil war brewing here,
You have a roster of which side you're on.
Yeah. So Kevin Smith enters the fray. Now, he's referring mostly to Scorsese here. He's not addressing Coppola's comments, but Kevin Smith says, quote, Martin Scorsese is a genius, but to be fair, my entire film career, even prior to my film career, he's been pretty much saying the same thing about action movies. He added, quote, these Marvel movies come from a core, they come from a happy childhood, and the reflections of a happy childhood. He's not wrong, but at the same time, neither are we for loving these movies, and they are cinema, end quote.
Yep,
so how do we begin to parse all this, Rich? Do we want to start by talking about Coppola's quotes and then dive into Kevin Smith, or do you just want to just ramble in your own direction?
Yeah, right, keep on rambling.
Because I don't want to rehash the debate
right.
we had a few weeks ago about Scorsese. We actually both agreed that in his definition of cinema, that the Marvel movies are not, quote-unquote,
cinema
high art
right.
version of cinema. If you want to say cinema is anything that appears in a theater or it's any film in general, yes, of course, there's cinema. But we both agree that Scorsese was using the word in a different connotation.
Yeah, referring to something that's a higher art form.
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we came to an agreement on last week. I will say...
But despicable, Rich.
Yeah, I think that's going way too far. I mean, that makes it sound like you're almost like a peon for enjoying these movies. How dare you?
Yeah.
Like, that's going too far. I wouldn't... although there are things that I would say are despicable and things that I would be like, oh, I can't believe you like that. At the end of the day, I would still be like, if that's your thing, you do it on your own. Just know I wouldn't want to be involved with it. You know,
right. Don't trash on anybody else's, you know, enjoyment.
Yeah, you can do it. Right. If there's a certain musician you love, if there's a certain movie you love. This is America, you know,
right.
Do what you want to do on your own time.
This is America.
The song.
That song.
Yeah.
That's a good song.
It's all right.
Are you trashing on my song choices, Rich?
A little bit.
No, I'm kidding. But I agree. Despicable is
I think
a very,
that's going too far.
It's a harsh term.
Yeah.
It's an angry term. There's no reason for anybody to be this angry at a genre of film unless you feel threatened.
Well... Right. I think this is where the hatred is coming from, and there was a little bit that bled into it from Scorsese's comments, is that the kind of movies that Coppola and Scorsese made, it is something that you kind of are you don't really see anymore getting funded.
No.
You know? Movies that are heavy on dialogue and heavy on biographies and stuff like that. They're not really getting funded at the pace of, you know, a Marvel movie, a DC movie, an established franchise.
But
that's been happening for a while now.
I'm going to take a step back and say I don't think that I agree with that, because that's always been the film industry standard, right? And it's funny because one of the people that hates the Marvel Universe and everything new, Steven Spielberg, he directly contributed to the modern film industry when he started making his blockbusters. Blockbusters became a thing under Spielberg and George Lucas. So from as far back as the 70s, the way that the model has worked is you have these tentpole blockbusters that give these studios, Disney and Universal and Warner Brothers, everybody, gives them the huge influx of cash that actually allows them to spend on the smaller projects. So one can make the argument that smaller projects wouldn't exist, period, if not for the funding that the blockbusters bring in. Because yeah, that's how the model has been since the
70s. Well, that's the model the way it was in the 70s and the 80s. But I think now with movie studios now looking at whether or not this makes a profit or this does well in this country or you know, it that really is the driving force now behind whether or not these corporations really take on projects.
I think there's still room for the smaller pieces, though. I mean, I know as I'm following them for This Week in Entertainment, like I talked about one last week, The Lighthouse. I mean, it's black and white, 2 hours of two people talking in a single room, you know, so there's definitely still room for movies like that. Parasite, the South Korean film, you know, that.
By the way, Parasite. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that, because the trailer for that came on before Zombieland 2 when I went to go see it. I knew what it was.
And it looks real good, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, actually.
There's still a lot of room for films like that. And, you know.
But I think the issue is, I feel, if it's not attached to a Scorsese or a Coppola, if it's an independent filmmaker, are they really going to put the money behind
it? They're afraid because they are a dying breed. And they're finding it hard to find funding. That doesn't mean that others aren't finding funding, because Nolan's still finding funding. I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that did Birdman and the Bear movie. He found plenty of funding. Cuarón found funding. They're still finding, and Scorsese has one coming out on Netflix. He's giving him a whole bunch of money to go hire every one of his gangster buddy film actors, you know, so the funding is still there. I think that they just feel threatened because it's new and different, which isn't really a breathtaking new notion to add to the conversation, because that's how it always works. But
I think you're giving them a little bit favorable toss of the coin, because obviously if Scorsese comes to a movie producer and says, I want to make this movie, I think it's going to do really well, I think you're going to be more tempted to give money to Scorsese or Coppola than you are to whoever would be the next Coppola, the next, you know, the next up-and-comer. And I think that's the worry, is that these movie companies are relying too much on the Marvel and the franchise standard in terms of creating new content and creating new movies. You know, it's almost like if these movies aren't backed, if your screenplay isn't backed by a comic book or by a popular book or something to that nature, will it be something that actually gets the fair treatment in being funded down the road?
Yeah, you know what? Coppola made his name on one of those.
Yes, he did. That's right.
You know, so it's like it's this whole catch 22. Like you look at the biggest big names, Kubrick, all books.
Yeah.
2001 Space Odyssey, Shining, they're books. You know, so I don't know. I had a lot of film classes when I was in grad school, and even back then it was just all this moaning about there's not enough good cinema, there's not enough good films, and I always say there's plenty of good films. It's just different now, right? I mean, they're still there. They're on Netflix, they're on Amazon. Yes, the industry is changing, but it's still there in some form. And I think that the advent of these new formats actually offers people more opportunity. You know, I just saw a Facebook post of somebody I'm friends with that says their independent film is coming out, you know, and it's going to be doing the festival circuit, you know? And it's like one of those things. There's so many more opportunities with, you know, access to software and access to phones that shoot better video, you know, than, you know, some point-and-shoot cameras. And, you know, it's easier to get out there now. So I understand the argument, and I get it, and I get that they are worried for the future of film, but I just don't see it. Every Oscar season, I don't see it when you see these big, amazing films. You know, they keep expanding the category because there's so many great films coming out. Too many films that people have time to see. So I don't see it as being the doom and gloom that they necessarily do. But, you know, I guess I'm a little biased though, because I like the Marvel films. So
yeah, I
look at it as a positive force in film.
Yeah, I do too. But I'm also seeing it from Scorsese's point of view as well.
Yeah. And I
Coppola, though, went too far. I don't know why he's going out there calling him despicable.
Coppola went too far, and I'm glad we're circling back to the quotes here because, yeah, the thing is, I'm really bothered by the part where he says we expect to gain something, some enlightenment, some knowledge, some inspiration. You know, how can you say that somebody's not gaining those things from these movies, right? And it's like, maybe you're not, but that doesn't mean that other people aren't. And it goes back to my original argument is that it, and Kevin Smith's argument in this, is that it does matter to people. You know, not you, but it matters to others. Kevin Smith talked about how it's personal for a lot of the audience. He mentions, you know, going to the movies with his dad in the 70s and 80s and seeing those blockbusters. And it's a release for him. And it's, you know, escapism for him. And he mentions that there are probably things that Scorsese grew up on that people at the time didn't count as cinema or didn't or counted as less than. You know, every generation has that thing. I'm not trying to say that Endgame is going to go on to be, you know, Godfather, but I don't think it's trying to.
Right, I don't think it is either.
You know, but that doesn't mean that people can't get something.
I think if anything, that's only asshole fans that are trying to, you know, be like, "Oh, this is the best movie ever."
Yeah, I think that it was really good.
Yeah.
And I think that it will stand the test of time in terms of being a fantastic movie you can keep going back to and enjoying. And that's really the most you can hope for something like this, you know, is that it stands the test of time, that people want to keep revisiting it because it matters to them in some way. Maybe you don't have some earth-shattering revelation about human nature, but don't sit there and say that people can't be inspired over it. People can't be enlightened. They can't take inspiration from seeing these heroes. We see little kids and they, you know, Halloween's coming up and all the kids are going to be dressed as Marvel heroes. And you see the little girls dressed up as Captain Marvel and you know, Gamora and all these strong female leads. Like, you can't sit there and say that it's not having a positive impact because it is, yeah. Right? You know, so it's like you got to be a little flexible. You can't just say it's despicable and write it off. That was my big complaint with Scorsese. You're just writing it off because it's different and you haven't seen it and you're just passing judgment. Don't pass judgment without giving it a shot. You can have your opinion, but I don't like the hand waving.
But to be fair, I don't think Scorsese would be the kind of guy that would even enjoy those movies.
No, he's not. And that's totally fine.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a right way and a wrong way to say it, and Despicable was the wrong way to say it.
Well, that's Coppola.
Yeah, and the wave handing of both the hand waving of both of them. I agree with Scorsese, but the hand waving of it just sort of bugged me. It's just you
haven't hung out with a lot of old people. That's your problem. You need to get used to that. That's what old people do all the time.
No, but it pisses me off. I try not to hand wave other people's things. If somebody says, like, I really like, we listened to Old Town Road before. Oh, before God. The show, because you mentioned, I was like, I'd never heard of it because I'm old and out of touch. So I listened to it.
I'm glad you admit it.
I am. I'm old and out of touch. So I listened to it and I was like, you know what? It seems kind of shallow to me and it didn't really do much for me. But I said, I liked the, you know, the short film or
the music video
part of it. It was like funny. It has merits to it, but I didn't hand wave it away. I didn't say like, oh, it's modern music, I hate it automatically. I was like, I'm going to listen to it. And Rich sat here and grumbled for 4 minutes as I watched Old Town Road. And yeah. I was like, you know what? I watched it. It's not for me, but I found some positives in it. And that's all I'm saying is that don't hand wave it away. Give it a shot. If you don't like it, totally fine. Lots of things I don't like, but don't just dismiss it out of hand.
Okay. Well, there's one last quote to end this discussion on from James Gunn. He decided to jump into the debate after these comments, and I think Mike wants to read it because you think it's the perfect summary of how to feel.
It's sort of what I've been alluding to. He says, quote, superheroes are simply today's gangsters, cowboys, outer space adventurers. Some superhero films are awful, some are beautiful, like Westerns and gangster movies, and before that, just movies. Not everyone will be able to appreciate them, even some geniuses, and that's okay. And that's really what it boils down to.
Yep.
Is that every generation has this type of movie. Not everybody has to like everything, but it doesn't mean that it's without merit. There's merit in everything, you know?
Right. All right, so there you go. Marvel debate redux.
Yeah, is this going to be a weekly thing? Are more directors going to jump into this?
Well, there was a Onion there was an Onion article that said the ghost of Orson Welles is going to come back and announce his decision on whether or not he likes the Marvel movies.
Ah, the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence. Ah, the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
That's how he starts the quote, Marvel.
He might like him.
He might.
He reduced himself to doing commercials.
Right.
He might not have a choice to side with them.
He was in the first Transformers cartoon movie.
Good Lord.
Yeah, there you go.
Ah, the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence. Ah, the French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
Marvel. Yeah.
It has always been celebrated for its CGI.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do with it. All right, so there you go. That officially wraps up the Marvel debate redux.
Again, every week, we're just going to be trashing on the Eagles, talking about the Marvel controversy, just over and over again. Do we ever get to talk about anything new, Rich? No, we're not allowed to.
Well, hey, each week, you never know. Maybe there'll be something new
I know.
That happens in the entertainment field. But for right now, that's where we've got to end it. But coming up next, here's something that always changes every week. That's the non-fortune cookie odd news. And I've got some crazy stories that you need to hear in the non-fortune cookie odd news. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
Don't be a big stupid jellyfish. Keep on listening to the Crispy Noodle. I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel. What? Reapers are back. I should go.
I'm Nikolai Volkov. I want you to keep listening to Crispy Noodle. Hey, that is order.
Hey, this is Tony Gaga. You got a podcast? You gotta go to the podcast I go to. I'll get you this podcast for $2. That's the Crispy Noodle Podcast for $2.
Yeah, we're back here on the Crispy Noodle Podcast. We are done the sports sampler and the entertainment entree. Both of us have had our mild form of panic attacks at some point during the show.
Yes.
But now I think we come to the part, though, that we both genuinely enjoy, and I don't think we'll have another panic attack in this part of the show.
We'll see.
I mean, there is time. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean,
there's always time for a good old-fashioned panic attack.
That's right. Especially in our third and final segment of the show. Mike, what is it time for?
It's time for the Wacky the Wild, the always entertaining non-fortune cookie odd news.
We've been talking about cool and its ramifications and how it applies to the hip scene. But maybe you could give us some examples now of the opposite of cool, uncool. Just exactly what is uncool?
My nipples look like milk duds.
Holy shnikes.
It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
It's not of this world. I don't know exactly what it is or what it's doing, but this is not human intelligence, okay? It's not human intelligence we're facing!
How you doing? Me? I'm doing great.
Manda de bastata. I don't make this stuff up.
I'll take a pound of nuts.
That's a lot of nuts! That'll be $4, baby! You want fries with that?
I've seen the celery dance across the baseball fields.
You had me at meat tornado.
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Okay! what does that mean?
And now, it's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news.
So, sit back, get everything you need to get from the kitchen. Be sure and empty the bladders, go to the bathroom, because you're in for a hell of a ride.
Odd news.
That's right, everybody. It's time for the non-fortune cookie odd news. Here in this segment, Rich researches the news, he reads the news, and I react to the news. He finds all these weird and wacky stories and keeps them hidden from me, which ensures that all my reactions are my genuine gut reactions to hearing these stories for the very first time. I don't know what's about to happen. You guys don't know what's about to happen. And even Rich doesn't know what's about to happen because these stories always take us down wacky and wild paths. And I'm ready to get started. Where are we heading to first?
All right. This first story, We're going to go to the Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
How do you like that?
I like the Netherlands,
yeah.
I think.
We haven't...
They're very progressive-minded people.
Yeah, we haven't...
I don't think we've ever been there. Or at least not that I can recall.
Not in a long while.
I think we've been basically everywhere.
Because really, the only time I ever use... this is the only time I ever get to use this sound clip.
All right, gold member. Don't play the laughing boy. There are only two things I can't stand in this world. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
What?
I love that clip.
Yeah, so...
And the Dutch.
It's been a while since I got to pull that sound clip out.
Okay, so we have been there before then.
Yeah.
Because I do remember you using that at least once or twice.
But okay. This is...
So the Netherlands, what are they doing?
This is a crazy story here. It's actually... the best way to explain it would be if you ever saw the movie Blast from the Past or The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. This is kind of like this.
Okay.
A family spent 9 years in a basement because they were waiting for the end of time, according to police reports. Yeah, so...
they spent 9 years in
nine years
in a bunker, but what made them come up? Was that their plan? Like, we're going to spend 9 years and then we're going to come back to the surface and what it is, whatever the world is what it is? Or did something else precipitate them deciding to reemerge into society?
Well, a 58-year-old man and his family of young adults aged from 18 to 25.
Wow.
We're living
spent
at
9 years?
Yep. We're living at a farm in the province of Drenthe. A local news outlet said that the family had been living in complete isolation from the outside world because they thought it was the end of time.
What made them think that?
I don't know. What happened 9 years ago? 2010? Did something happen in 2010?
No.
Yeah.
The Mayan apocalypse was supposed to be 2012. Were
right.
they just ahead of schedule? We're going to spend 2 years down
just
here.
Just in case.
Just in case, right.
That's insurance policy.
Right. We don't want to risk anything, you know? So in 2010, they just decided...
Did anything else happen in 2010? I can't think of anything else.
I can't think of anything,
yeah.
No. they just decided the world is ending. We're going to pack up. We're going to go underground. So the kids were 18 and 25 when they came up or when they went underground?
No, when they came up. So,
okay, so they...
the youngest is 9.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So we're talking about kids that are 9... When they went down first, they would have been 9.
This really
two...
is like the actual plot of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't, well, they weren't kidnapped in a traditional sense.
Right.
But yeah, that kid grew up underground.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel so bad for them. They're going to be so messed up. But like, what made them think the world was ending? And did they not like check every once in a while?
Yeah, right? Don't you have like
did they not have a radio? They turn on the radio like, oh, they're still talking about how the world is alive and well.
Yeah, and they're still talking about, like, sports.
Yeah, right?
Like, that's the thing that always gets to me. Like, if this was ever apocalypse, like, there would be no sports. No one's going to be worried about the baseball game.
Right. If it were an apocalyptic... So, this is the classic thing. In every apocalyptic story, everybody has, like, the radio. You know, they're always looking for anybody broadcasting.
Yeah.
You're telling me they don't have that one classic trope of searching for the broadcast?
Yeah, something.
They didn't have a radio, and they turn it on their first day in isolation. Like, oh, whoops.
So
they didn't have any, they didn't have like a scout or anything go up and like, go check the wasteland. See if, you know, society has started rebuilding yet.
Yeah,
no,
right?
Nothing.
Well, apparently at some point the 25-year-old got frustrated. So there you go. So he finally
I
had
would
enough.
Imagine. Yeah.
He finally had enough of this. I've been down here since I was
the
six,
kid. Yeah. 16. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my God.
He's
yeah.
like enough of this.
Right. I got
been locked in a room with. Yeah, exactly.
I got hormones. All right. I want to go get laid.
Right. Exactly. Poor kid is, oh my God, spent his whole time locked in a room with his, I can't imagine it was a very large bunker.
Right, yeah. And I don't think there's much privacy.
No.
So the oldest one, who is 25 now, decided to go above ground. His first action was to go to the local bar.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, I need a drink. I've been down in a frickin' bunker for 9 years.
The bartender's like, what's got you down, friend? I just spent 9 years in a bunker with my family.
Yeah.
Because I thought the world was ending.
I need to get the hell out of there.
Bartender gives him the next drink on the house.
I hope so.
Right?
So he went to, yeah, that's the first thing he did. He went to a bar in the village of Runerworld. Runerworld?
Sure.
I don't know.
That sounds like a word.
Yeah, Runerworld. I don't know. Crazy Dutch. he then told the staff that he needed help to rescue his family. The bartender told police that the man had long hair, a dirty beard, old clothes, and looked confused. He said he looked like he'd never been to the barber during those 9 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I bet you they didn't. He said that he was the oldest sibling, and he wanted to end the way that his family was living. That's when police officers visited the remote farmhouse and carried out a search. That's when they discovered a hidden staircase behind a cupboard in the living room that led down to a secret basement room where the family were housed for 9 years.
How?
Yeah.
Like, did they stockpile 9 years worth of stuff?
I would imagine they had to.
I can't even begin to imagine how that would work. Like, food perishes after a while.
Not if they're canned.
So they just had nine years worth of like kidney beans.
Yeah. You've had a steady diet of beans.
Oh, my God. That room.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Also, the area's postmaster said that his branch never delivered a letter there.
Okay, I'm calling bull on this. Not one piece of junk mail?
Yeah, nothing?
Nothing? No, that's fake. I know it's fake now. Do you know how much mail we get every day?
Yeah.
That just immediately goes straight into the shredder of the trash?
Just even junk mail, yeah.
Right, something exactly.
Something should be going to that spot.
Or is the Netherlands like this magical place where there's no junk mail?
Maybe it is.
Man, could you imagine?
No, all the drugs you want and no mail.
This sounds like a paradise. Sign me up.
There you go.
And it's probably cool temperatures all year round.
Police in Drenthe confirmed that the 58-year-old man was then arrested and also charged with refusing to cooperate. So I guess, oh my God, the police probably stormed in there and he probably actually thinks it's like a government takeover of his bunker.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is the person, you know, you have to put yourself in their shoes. Like, he thought the world was ending.
Yeah.
So this is like straight up post-apocalyptic dystopian stuff where, you know, these stormtroopers come down and they burst in through the door and they're going to snatch up your family and take them to some government facility and brainwash them. And yeah, this all fits into the narrative.
Yeah.
Question though, what I still want to know, the story doesn't say what they thought was going to happen.
Yeah. It just says
just the world
the
was going to end.
Yeah. They said the end of time was coming.
And they never checked. They're like, we're sealing the door. We have no way to tell if society is rebuilding.
Yeah, that's it.
This is just, it's done. After this door closes, this is just the rest of your life forever.
Yep, that's it.
That doesn't make any sense. Even in the other post-apocalyptic movies and shows, they always check, right? Like The Walking Dead, they go out and they look for other communities. And I Am Legend, he's always fiddling with the radio. There's always something, you know?
Yeah. Blast from the Past, they don't check because they think it's a radiation. They think the radiation from a nuclear bomb,
but you wouldn't have
last 30 years.
But you
or
wouldn't
something.
Have a radio. You always have the radio.
Yeah, but you're underground. I don't know. I'm trying to think of.
I just feel well. Clearly, he didn't actually. What I'm getting at is he didn't think the world was ending. He just wanted to kidnap his family and keep them in one spot.
Yeah, I guess so.
But, that got dark with my interpretation of it. But I just feel like I don't know. It doesn't add up to me.
You can't go up there,
right? Have you ever seen the movie 10 Cloverfield Lane?
No. That's the Cloverfield spinoff?
It's, right, one of the movies in the spinoff where this guy, like, I'm not even sure. It's very weird. But he basically captures these two people, and he's like, I'm protecting you by keeping you in this bunker because there's some crazy-ass alien stuff going on out there. And they're like, oh, we don't believe you. And they start finding clues like, oh, he had somebody else down here. And it looks like he may have or may not have murdered them, ? And so the whole movie is about them like trying to find out if there is actually something going on above the surface.
Yeah.
And I'll leave you to go watch the movie on your own time to find out what happens. But it's a great hook, and it sounds exactly like this.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, this is a real-life case of that.
But they had windows, Rich. They could see. They go up the little tunnel. They can look out the tiny window in the door. There's always a way to check.
What, these guys did? The family?
In 10 Cloverfield Lane.
10 Cloverfield Lane. Oh.
That's what I'm saying. In every TV show or movie, there's always a way to check if the society has started to rebuild. So that guy was not prepared to check if society's rebuilding. Ergo, he was never prepared to leave that bunker. He was going to stay there until the end of his days.
Yep.
Which also, what do you do with a body if you die in a bunker?
Yeah.
Where does do they have plumbing?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't
know. How much toilet paper do they stock for? What happens if you run out?
I guess you have to start. You're
like, we have 10,000 rolls. If we run out, we run out.
Yeah,
like
you're gonna have to start using.
What about growing out of the clothes? Like
yeah.
The kid went in there when she was 9.
Yeah, the one now, kid's 9.
Or, I said
18.
She. I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but yeah, now they're 18.
Elastic sweatpants,
right? They're just wearing like tarps fashioned into like what do you call those things? The Roman.
Well,
things.
The bartender noted the older sibling wore very old clothes, and obviously they didn't care about the hair because he said he hadn't been to the barber,
so they didn't even bring a pair of scissors.
Yep,
this was the least prepared doomsday preppers I've ever heard of.
Yep. They spent 9 years in the basement waiting for the end of time.
I mean, that sounds great to spend all your time in the basement doing whatever you want away from everything, but not for 9 years straight.
Yeah, crazy Dutch.
All right, gold member. Don't play the laughing boy. There are only two things I can't stand in this world. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
What?
Yeah, the crazy Dutch.
What? That's our reaction to the story.
Yeah. Let's move on here. Let's do a local story here.
Okay, how local we getting?
Scranton.
Okay,
that's within driving distance.
Yeah.
Of Philly here. Police in Pennsylvania said that they are looking for someone who bought a used cell phone with a fake $1 million bill and then attacked the woman when he was confronted about it.
Oh my God.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
Yes. Always got to love these stories. The fake $1 million bill.
$1 million bill.
Yeah.
Why? Why are you shooting for the moon?
Yeah.
Why? So they're buying a used cell phone.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. The only thing I have is
this
million.
$1 million bill.
Can you break $1 million bill?
That's always been my argument is... It's what store would break a $1 million bill?
I don't like breaking $100. What makes this person think that you could just hand a cashier $1 million bill and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I got change for that.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's, really? Here's $999,000 and $452.
Yeah. They were incredibly optimistic.
Yeah.
See, you got to shoot for something realistic.
Yeah.
You know? Go in there with like, do they have $1,000 bill? $10,000? What is?
I think it goes up to. No, I think there used to be $1,000 bill. I don't think there is anymore.
I'm gonna look it
up. Yeah, look it up. Scranton police say that Alexis Brown agreed to sell her used iPhone 6S for $100 to a buyer she met online. There you go. It was only gonna cost $100.
Fantastic.
Yes, you're going to get $999,900 back with this fake $1 million bill. When the two met up at a local Starbucks, the buyer handed Brown a couple of bills. She gave him the phone. Then suddenly he ran away. The Scranton Times Tribune reports that the roll contained two real $1 bills, a real $10 bill, and then the phony $1 million bill. Brown told her girlfriend, who was getting them coffee at the time, named Bonnie Wolo, about the fake $1 million bill, and Wolo ran after the buyer. When she tried to grab the phone from him, he then punched her in the face.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Just how dare you not accept my $1 million bill? That's how dare you? It's legit currency. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. How dare you? Just...
So I have some information on denominations, if you're interested.
Yes.
So it seems like in 1995 they discontinued a 500, a 1,000, a 5,000, and a $10,000 dollar bills. There was what? The $1,000 bill had Grover Cleveland on it.
Good job, Grover.
William McKinley was on the 500. James Madison was on the 5,000, and Salmon P. Chase was on the 10th. Is this right? I feel like this is fake. I don't even know. So, but anyway, the point is that now it seems like the largest note that is in circulation is a $100 bill, I think, which also doesn't seem right, but that's what Wikipedia says, and Wikipedia always tells the truth.
Well, I would agree, because...
Oh, rarely used. $2, still printed, 500, 1,000, 5,000, and 10,000, discontinued, but still legal tender.
I would agree with that, because anything more than a couple hundred bucks, usually that's like electronic at that point. You're trying to...
Yeah.
That's usually stuff you're talking about, down payment on a house or down payment on a car.
Right. So it seems like there was a $100,000 bill that had Woodrow Wilson on it.
Yeah, that's right. I remember reading something about that.
Wow. Was never in circulation, therefore cannot legally be held.
Ah.
This is actually really interesting. There's some really weird... Andrew Jackson was on a $10,000 bill?
Yeah, because when you think of banking, you think of Andrew Jackson.
Oh, yeah. For those that don't get the reference, Andrew Jackson destroyed the central bank.
Yeah.
And basically, you can trace... the Great Depression back to that action of him destroying the central bank. So
fun.
Yay, banks. Back to the story at hand. $1 million bill does not exist, has never existed.
Yep.
This person had no shot in hell of passing this $1 million bill off.
No.
But tried for it anyway. Even though the phone was, what'd you say, $100?
$100.
Good job.
Yep. Brown says that the buyer was between 16 and 20 years old. Police say he's still on the loose in Scranton. So, yeah, he got away with it.
So, dumb.
Maybe he's going to try and do another $1 million bill.
Maybe. Maybe that one will work.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to our podcast.
Who did he put on the $1 million bill?
Yeah, right? Who do you put on it?
Because it's, like I just pointed out, it was never actually a thing. So, like, I want to know who he decided was worthy of being on the $1 million bill.
Yeah. John Wayne.
John Wayne. I mean, I mean, that's as good as anybody else he could have come up with, right. I guess.
But if he listens to our podcast, next time, try a bill that was actually in circulation.
Right, exactly.
try that first.
Do your research, kid.
Yeah, you got to do a little bit of research before
it
you
took
try
me
and scam
like,
people.
It took me like 30 seconds and 3 Wikipedia articles. Come on.
All right, next story, we're going to Iowa.
Okay.
Yeah, Iowa.
What state?
Iowa. An Iowa man charged with exposing himself to a woman at a variety store told cops that the reason why he did it was because he had seen someone do it in a 70s pornographic film to pick up chicks and thought it would work. Yes. Yeah. I was watching this old 70s porno film, and I think it might work in 2019.
I mean, don't we all base everything we do on 1970s porno films? And that's the gold standard right there.
Flawless logic here.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yes. Yes, he thought that the victim would respond to his flashing sexually, according to a court filing. 23-year-old Nicholas Sheehy was arrested.
Sheehy?
Sheehy, yes, okay. That's his name. He was arrested Friday afternoon at the Dollar General in Ottumwa.
Classy.
Which is in a city 85 miles southeast of Des Moines. Sheehy was charged with indecent exposure. When confronted by police, Sheehy admitted that he indeed did. He was the one that whipped it out.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
According to the criminal complaint, the defendant stated that he was watching a 70s pornographic film earlier that day and believed that the female patron would respond to his advances sexually. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It worked in this movie.
Right. Oh my God. The excuses are so dumb. They just get dumber and dumber.
Yeah.
You know, I miss the simple days of people just being like, I don't know, I was just horny. This guy, you know, like, at least I had respect that they would just own up to it. This guy's like, oh no, I thought it would work in the movie, you know, it's tough picking up women, so I thought, why don't I try this tactic from this 1970s porno? Like, shut up. Shut up.
Isn't this how you pick up women? I thought you just show yourself off.
When in doubt, whip it out.
Like a peacock. Yeah, you just show off.
Ka-ka, ka-ka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that's how this works.
That's how it works in the animal kingdom, so you know it makes sense that it would work for humans as well.
Yeah.
They say it's a little nice rhyme there. When in doubt, whip it out, you know?
Unfortunately, the woman didn't respond sexually. She instead...
What?
Yeah, right? Surprise.
Oh, my... She didn't pounce right on it?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's the real shocker.
She instead contacted cops. He was then booked into the county jail. He was released after posting a $1,000 bond. So... he may do it. He's out and about, so I don't know. Maybe he'll do it again.
Do you think he'll try? I was just going to say, do you think he'll try his strategy again? Maybe it wasn't the right woman for him.
Right. Who knows? Maybe.
You know, maybe he just hasn't found the right one yet that'll pounce on it when he whips it out.
Yeah.
There has to be one out there somewhere, right?
Right. Right.
What happens if you get two Odd News people together? You know what I mean?
Like, what?
You know what I mean? Like, at some point in the history of Odd News, there had to have been one person that whips it out. Another person that's like, yeah, sure, let's do it.
Oh, you're
you know
saying,
what I mean?
Yeah, well,
like two Odd News people find each other in a sea of normal news people.
Well, when a Odd News woman meets an Odd News man and they want to get it on, they go rent a hotel room.
Do they, though?
Yes.
Or do they just do it right there on the lawn?
No, they rent the hotel room, but they want the minute rate. And then they get into a fight with the hotelier. About
somebody
rates.
Attacks somebody with a machete.
Right, and someone pulls out a machete.
And for some reason, they have a baby alligator in their briefcase.
Yeah. It's the circle of Odd News life. The
circle of Odd News life.
Right.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
And then an Odd News baby is born.
Right.
And they name that baby Cherry Waffles.
Yeah. You love that name.
I love that name. I will always remember that name.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of Odd News history, let's go to our... always reliable Florida Odd News stories.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
All right. I know you always like to analyze how angry people get. This guy definitely has a short fuse. 47-year-old Timothy Allen Farmer had enough with his neighbors. So while he decided to drink... He then got into his SUV and drove straight through the neighbor's kitchen in true Florida man fashion. Yeah, what? Just right through.
What
bam.
Was he so upset about? He was just upset. He was just raging against the machine.
At his neighbor, yeah.
he was just mad at the neighbor in general, just at their existence. He wakes up one morning, he's like, those people, they still exist, they got to pay for that.
I need to take them out with my SUV.
Right.
The neighbors were not injured in the incident, although they were actually in the house when the SUV crashed. So, wow, that'll wake you up all of a sudden. Oh, my God.
Yeah, really.
When police arrived, Farmer was staying in his white Ford Explorer.
What's the logic? If I don't get out, they can't arrest me? I'm just going to stay. I'm going to live in this car for the rest of my life.
Until the cops go away.
Yeah, right. He just ducks down. Maybe they won't see me.
Yep. If I don't get out of the car, yeah, you can't say it was me.
Oh, my God.
The cops asked him why he did this. He then shouted, I'm tired of these effing people.
But why? Just of their existence? They're just alive, and that bothers him.
Yeah, apparently.
I could just picture this guy grumbling to himself. He's sitting in his house. Those neighbors, they're existing. They're breathing air.
My air.
Those bastards. What gives them the right to live and enjoy life?
The arrest report says that his eyes were bloodshot and he was slurring his speech.
Okay, that makes sense.
He then tried to get out of the car, but he could barely stand. But he somehow managed to down another beer in the process. And when asked why he did that, he said, I'm just making the best of a shitty situation.
You see, he's just owning up to it.
Yeah.
You got to have at least a little respect for that. He's just like, you know what? If I'm going to go down, I might as well have a good time. You know?
So he brought a beer with him on this rampage.
Right. You got to have you know, a couple for
case,
the road.
Well, in case you get thirsty.
Yeah.
You know, rampaging, it takes a lot out of you.
You got to bring some roadies.
That's right.
Yeah.
Make it sound like he's going on a journey. He literally went, like, across the street or, like, next door, you know?
The damage he caused rendered the home temporarily condemned because of the damage that he did.
Well, yeah, he drove through the kitchen.
Yeah. Police also found that there was a restraining order filed by the neighbors against Farmer, but obviously that didn't stop him.
What happened between these people? I really want to know.
Yeah. Farmer has been charged with numerous charges, including resisting arrest, driving with a suspended license, forced entry, and criminal mischief.
So he's a real winner.
Yeah. He racked up a good amount of charges.
Jeez. Do you know how much, like, the amount of anger that you would have to generate to drive a car into a building? Because that amount of anger has to bypass that, like, gate in your mind that
you shouldn't drive a car into a building.
You know, have you ever toyed with that idea? Like, I wonder what it would feel like to just, like, go into the other lane when there's, like, no cars around.
I've had enough.
But your brain is like, no, you shouldn't do that. So you have to muster the anger to overcome that hurdle and then overcome the hurdle of I'm going to ruin my car and potentially bodily harm myself. Like, that's a lot of hurdles your mind, your anger has to jump over.
Well, alcohol also helps, too.
Oh, that's right. I forgot the alcohol.
Yeah. Alcohol.
Actually, it's not that hard, then, once you factor in the alcohol.
Alcohol is like steroids for your brain to jump over those barriers.
Alcohol is the performance-enhancing drug
for anger,
for bad ideas. Yeah. Yes. For anger and bad ideas. Yeah. I like it.
Yep.
I forgot about the alcohol. That perfectly explains it. Never mind. Take all my careful analysis, just crumple up, throw it in the trash.
There you go.
You solved it in one word, alcohol.
Yes. But also, he must have been still legit angry, though, because...
Because he had to drink enough to bypass those barriers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I could ever muster that type of anger unless we're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. All right, and I got one more Florida story here for you.
Now, who is this guy in Florida?
It's Florida, and they're crazy.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to go on a weird story of a weird rampage here. Here we go. A Florida man has pleaded not guilty after he's being accused of causing more than $1,000 worth of damage at two Cape Coral plumbing businesses, according to police. 24-year-old Joseph Michael Beinick was detained by deputies from the sheriff's office last Saturday after he was found inside the premises without any clothing on.
Okay.
And still holding a hammer. So,
all right.
Yeah, there you go.
No clothes, but he somehow has a hammer.
Yeah. When officers arrived at the scene, they found the suspect partially clothed and some of his possessions, including the hammer and a mobile phone, in a bathroom. That's when he yelled at the cops, "Yo, it's not me. I'm taking a shit. I didn't break in." Yes, he's literally using the bathroom as an excuse.
Wait, so let me understand. He broke into this place, right? Or no? I'm confused. So he broke. What was like?
Well, luckily we have surveillance footage, so we have the definitive truth here.
Okay. So wait, was this a business?
So first off, yeah, this is a plumbing business.
Okay.
So first off, Beinick took a forklift from the United Plumbing warehouse and used it to blast through the fence of the neighboring company called iMold Water Damage and Mold Restoration. So first off, he's already causing property damage with this forklift.
Wow.
He's right there just taking down fences.
He went straight to 11.
Yeah. After he gained entry, that's when he started removing items of clothing. So right then and there, this is a good time to take off my clothes.
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
I'm always amazed at the the order of operations.
Yes.
Right? You have to break it down like a math problem. Order of operations.
Right.
Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally.
Yeah. So first,
so
gain access.
Gain access. Right. But he does it in the loudest, most obvious way possible.
Yeah.
And then he thinks, Now I pause.
Now.
And take the clothes off.
Take the clothes off. Now this is appropriate.
It would have been much smarter to take the clothes off and then, well, I mean, maybe you don't want to risk plowing through the fence and, you know, injuring anything, so you want to keep the clothes on, but there had to have been a better way to get in.
But now it's time.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Let's get to bashing butts as well as D's nuts.
So he takes all the clothes off. Does he leave the clothes with the forklift or does he take the clothes with him? This is very important, Rich.
Okay, so wait, hold on, wait. Let me go back to the step that I was at. Okay, so after he destroyed the fence with the forklift, he removed items of clothing.
Right.
Then he grabs a hammer, and this is when he starts damaging windows, doors, and three company vehicles.
Okay. So he's just hammering everything. Why didn't he just stay in the forklift?
It's time to hammer away.
It's hammer time.
This cannot be made good. It's shameful. It's a shameful, shameful day.
I'm disappointed you don't have hammer time.
Oh, you want me to find
stop?
Fine,
hammer time.
Yeah, but
because I thought that would be the perfect, you know. But why wouldn't he stay in the forklift to do the damage? You could have done a lot more damage with a forklift than going around and individually smashing windows with a hammer.
Yeah, you thought I wouldn't have it?
I mean, I don't know. I thought maybe you didn't have it ready to go. Why you
standing there, man? You can't touch this. Yeah, hammer time.
Yeah. School is in, sucker. You can't touch this. Give me a song. He's going to get there eventually.
Yeah, eventually, yeah.
Did he have the hammer with him? Did he bring it? Was it on the forklift?
Well, he's I don't know where he got the hammer from, but he has it and he's whacking away.
He has it, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love the process here, you know. Forklift, naked, hammer.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're at step three.
Step three, hammer time.
So after all this, then a keypad alarm inside the building lit up.
Hammer time.
After hammer time.
After hammer time.
So he plows through the fence with a forklift. He starts smashing a bunch of stuff. At that point, the alarm goes off.
Yeah, now the alarm
After
is
all
off.
This was already going on.
And that's when he decided to put back some of his clothes.
Well, he's about to get company.
Right, so right, you got to try and be...
You have to be presentable.
Presentable, yeah.
What clothing items did he choose, though? Did he put pants back on? Or did he just put on a shirt and leave everything else off? Shirt and socks. I want it to be shirt and socks.
So wait, this part, it doesn't say the clothes. Oh. But wait, we got more. The night's not over yet.
Oh, the night is young.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So
he's like, oh no, the alarm. Let me get my clothes again.
All right. Also, I this is why I'm getting confused. I got to keep in mind, this is two separate businesses. So the one that he's naked in and he's hammering the vehicles is the Eye Mold Water Damage and Mold Restoration.
They need a better name.
When the alarm went off, he put on his clothes. Then he went back to United Plumbing, which is where he got the forklift to break the fence in the first place.
So okay.
So now he's back to his original location. Then when he's back there, he takes off his clothes again.
What's the point of the clothes?
Well, it was very erotic. Yes, indeed. It was erotic.
I don't understand. Did he put the clothes back on just to go back to the other thing?
Yeah.
Like, oh, somebody might see me?
I gotta look presentable.
As I go through the gaping hole in the fence?
Yeah.
All right, sure.
Okay.
He puts the clothes, he can't decide. He's like, I don't know, is this a clothes on or a clothes off type of job?
So now he's back at the United Plumbing.
Clothes are back off.
Yeah, now the clothes are back off. And that's when he decided to go into the bathroom and take a shower.
Oh my God.
Yes, I gotta clean myself.
You know, he worked up a sweat.
Yeah, all this rampaging. Yeah.
I think it's every time he goes across or through or across the fence, he has to have clothes on. Because the first time he goes through, he has clothes on.
Yeah,
then he takes them off. I have to go back through the fence. I got to put my clothes on, go back through the fence, and take them off again. For whatever reason, the fence is like he needs his clothes
to go through.
I don't get it.
Just in case somebody watches him or something.
Right.
Okay. So now he's taking a shower.
So these bathrooms have showers in them? I thought this was a business.
Well, I guess, well...
How many businesses do you know that have showers in their bathrooms? Just stop at the bathroom at Wawa and it's like, oh, there's a shower in here.
Take a quick shower. The surveillance video shows the man being led out of the business in handcuffs when police arrived. He grabbed, at some point, a blue United Plumbing shirt and yelled at the cops, "I swear to God, I'm in the bathroom taking a shit. I didn't break in, you idiots. I work here. I was taking a dump."
Oh, well, he tried, I guess.
Yes, he's trying to blame it on going to the bathroom.
I'm assuming this is in the middle of the night, though.
Yeah.
So why, assuming that if you have a job, you are living somewhere, so why would you leave that place of residence in the middle of the night to go to your place of work?
To get a shower.
And go, to use take the bathroom. A shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't make... Or is he saying that he's out and about on the town and he's like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. Let me stop by my place of work.
Yeah.
That's so
might as well
weird.
Take a dump while I'm here.
That's so weird.
Bainek also initially refused to put down the hammer, which forced police to use a canine to subdue him.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So
we've never had that before.
So, yeah. If
police using a dog to take down somebody.
Yeah. This is just so weird.
This is the dumbest.
Past records show Bainek did work there at one time, but he was dismissed from his job a few months ago.
Probably because he's crazy.
Yeah. Bainek was charged with 2 counts of burglary, property damage, resisting arrest, and larceny. He's being held on a $26,500 bond. And Clark County records show that he has officially pled not guilty, so he's going to fight this.
Well, he was just trying to go to the bathroom.
Good luck. I mean, they have everything on the surveillance security camera.
They caught it all on tape. Whatever.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Let them fight it. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Stupid.
What a tale.
Tale of two businesses.
Yeah, and weird procedures.
Yeah, he took his shirt. He took his clothes off every time he went across the fence.
Yeah.
That's the strangest thing to me. Like
we have to respect the line of business.
Exactly. It doesn't. Like I guess he's like I have to be presentable when I enter, and then once I get in there, then I can take my clothes off and make myself comfortable.
Right.
But the first impression
is very important.
Right. First impressions are important. So you're going through the fence. You got to be clothed. And then right. Once you're in, then they can come off.
Right. Then you can show people whatever you want.
I think it's funny though that he started in one place. Went to the other place. He's like, oh, wait, I forgot. I had to break more stuff over there. So he goes back like, okay, oh, I forgot. You know what it like?
I got a lot of hammering to do.
It was a very inefficient course of events is all I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. That's what I have for you this week in the non-Fortune Cookie Odd News. A bunch of crazy stories there for you. All right, but before we officially wrap it up, let's go over what have we learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
All right, Mike, what have you learned?
Well, I learned that it's very important to follow the order of odd news operations.
Yeah, right? Obviously.
First you break in, then the clothes come off, then you smash the stuff.
Then you put the clothes back on.
Right, the clothes come back on. You go to the other location. The clothes come back off. And then you continue to smash stuff. Very important. There's a strict procedure here.
Whenever you're walking the borders between different businesses, you have to be clothed.
Right, exactly. Because first impressions are important.
Yep.
You can't break into a business naked. What are they going to think?
Yeah, what are we, heathens?
This burglar is some trashy person. No. You put on a nice shirt, a nice pair of pants. You break in. Then, you know, once you feel a little comfortable with the place, then you can take the clothes off.
Yeah, duh.
But that first impression has to be really strong. Come on, amateurs. This is like the worst job interview ever. Person breaks in, just strips down. I learned that, you know, if you're having trouble getting over that mental barrier, Alcohol is a performance-enhancing drug for bad decisions and mental barriers.
If you're looking to improve your bad ideas, add alcohol.
Yeah, it's a hell of a thing, yeah. I also learned that if you need something else for inspiration, you can take advice on how to pick up women from 70s pornos.
Yes, and do it step by step.
Right.
Do not skip a step. Literally show everything.
There's really only one step, though, isn't there?
Yes. But I'm telling people to be very particular.
Right. When in doubt, whip it out.
Or it won't work.
Right. Eventually, I want to see two Odd News people meet and fall in love and create an Odd News baby. I'm a romantic. What can I say?
Yeah.
And I want Odd News people to fall in love. And finally, I learned that there was at one point a $100,000 bill with Woodrow Wilson on it.
Yeah, that's
legit. That was actually something that I learned,
Yeah, that's a real fact.
Yeah, there you go.
And Grover Cleveland was on $1,000.
Grover Cleveland was on $1,000 bill. Yeah, they had some really weird people that they decided that's the person we want on money.
Yeah.
Grover Cleveland or William McKinley.
Yeah.
Of all the presidents.
Good job, McKinley.
They got past Washington and Lincoln. They're like, oh, shit, we're out of presidents that can go on money.
Yeah. We're out of good
now, presidents. Why wasn't Teddy Roosevelt on any money? FDR's on the dime. Why does he only get the dime?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just saying there's other people out there we can put on money.
Yeah.
Andrew Jackson.
Why is Andrew Jackson on?
That's two of them. Yeah, that's always the one that's made me wonder.
Yeah.
And Ulysses S. Grant?
Yeah, that's right. He's on a 50.
Something's not adding up here. This is weird.
We gotta investigate that.
Yeah, we'll revisit that. We'll contact the Treasury Department.
Yeah. But for right now, that's what we've learned on this episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Yes, sir.
I'm if I know what we did.
Oh, man, just like that. Another episode of the Crispy Noodle Podcast is in the books.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Yep. Thank you for listening to the Crispy Noodle Podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure to go to our website, thecrispynoodle.com. Make sure to like us on Facebook, The Crispy Noodle. Follow us on Twitter, at The Crispy Noodle. And on Instagram, at The Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. You can also subscribe to our channel on YouTube, where you can find interviews, best bits, and a whole lot more. But most importantly, remember to subscribe to The Crispy Noodle Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. You get the latest episodes downloaded for free every Thursday, so make sure you search for, download, and subscribe to The Crispy Noodle Podcast on the podcast service of your choice.
That's right. We also have a SoundCloud page where we have the mini noodles, the best bits of the show shrunk down into a quick 2 to 3 minute promo clip that you can easily listen to with friends and family. The craziness that is the Crispy Noodle Podcast.
That's right. So many ways to get in touch with and share the Crispy Noodle Podcast. But if you want to get in touch with us individually to share your sports, entertainment, and odd news stories, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Mikey Costanzo, MikeyCostanzo.
And I am at Rich Liebig, RichLiebig. Find us on the Twitters. Let us know what's happening. If you have any odd news, send it my way. If you have anything in general that you want to submit to us for us to talk about, yeah, shoot it our way. And we'll give you a shout out if we use it on the show. And
absolutely.
You can directly influence the podcast.
Oh, my gosh. So much power.
Yeah, you guys have it.
Use it wisely.
Yes. So if there's anything interesting that you want us to talk about, send it our way, and we'll take it under consideration. It could be anything from odd news to entertainment to sports. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and we'll review it. So we'll let you know. We'll let you know if we talk about it with a shout out as well. But for right now, we got to start wrapping this up. This has been the Crispy Noodle Podcast. Let us be the crispy noodle in your vegetarian salad of life and boring news. That's gonna do it. We will see you guys next week.
See you guys
later.
Some of us have great stories, pretty stories that take place at lakes with boats and friends and noodle salad.
A lot of people, that's their story. Good times, noodle salad.
Hello, it is I, your good friend and former President Barack Obama. It's been a while. I'm joined by the leader of the ghost clergy, Cardinal Copia.
How you doing, United States of America?
Well, I'm well, but now you may be asking yourself,
why are we here?
Well, it's 2019 and nothing makes sense anymore. But anyway, in my retirement and during his infernal time away from the clergy, we've both been listening to a few podcasts.
Ones that will make the asses wobble!
Yes, those are good ones, but we also need ones that bring us hope and change. One in particular with sports, entertainment, and odd news.
You give them a listen and a clappity-clap, yes?
Yes, a round of applause for our favorite podcast.
The Crispy Noodle Podcast 2019!